We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 497. We're brought to you today by Indeed and Bet Online. You'll hear more about those in a little bit. Sorry for the couple-day delay. Normally, we try and publish on a Monday. Today is Wednesday. Scott, you're still in Boston. Kemp is doing well. I know people, I myself have been loving those social media updates, and it definitely melts my heart when I see Bevin's updates. And my mom is constantly texting about the updates as well. So well done on those social media updates.
Yeah, it's the easiest way to update, you know, more people that are interested in him. He's got just so many people behind him. It's been really great. So just to start, really appreciate everybody reaching out. There's been a number of people who have reached out. Some people who have sent. I got to shout out my guy, Carlos, who not only gave Kemp his first Yankees jersey at spring training. You remember, we were down there, and he's part of BP crew. He's been to a number of games. I remember the one time we got to know each other really well, him and his son. We went to the Bronx Brewery and then walked to the stadium. We walked there, and then we took the train there and then ended up outside the stadium. It was that one day where it was like a 45 minute wait to get in, if you remember. It was like a really long line, kind of like out of nowhere. And so we were hanging out outside, just shooting the shit for a while, waiting to get into the stadium. So we got to know each other pretty well. And day one, Kemp's in there after his calf, and a balloon and a stuffed elephant comes, and it's it's from Carlos and his son Jake. So really cool, man. Just everybody's been outstanding. Really, really nice. My company that I'm working for, Blue Wire, has been fantastic. Just really good to with flexibility, and you know, sending me a whole bunch of food cards and just really cool stuff. Everybody's been really cool and really on Team Kemp, which, you know, makes me just super happy. It's really cool. So Kemp's doing well. Kemp is post-op now from Thursday. This is the like unbelievable healing power of children and modern medicine, and this is why I have a complicated relationship with the city of Boston, because the doctors up here and the nurses and the whole medical staff are just fantastic. They're best in the world. So Thursday surgery, And he is pretty much shedded all of the gear that he's had as far as wires and tubes and all of these things that make it super uncomfortable. All his numbers are in a really good place. We're out of the ICU in the step down wing, which is the place you got to go before you leave. And yeah, we're just kind of checking some boxes now at this point, getting him to a comfort level, making sure he's eating and drinking and all these things before we get some walking papers. So this dude is you know, now that he's shedded everything, he's ready to really move around and start acting like a 3-year old again. And it's just amazing when you think about that he had heart surgery less than a week ago and to where he is today, even 2 days ago, to see the difference is pretty outstanding. So yeah, again, thanks for everybody reaching out. You guys have all been really good. It certainly helps, you know, going through this whole deal and to know that everybody's behind Kemp. So appreciate it.
Yeah, it's probably a situation where being 3 years old is like the only way you get through that, just so strong and stoic. And
oh,
just
dude, if I had chest
like
tubes,
the way he's doing it,
if yeah. I had chest tubes,
we'd
and like
bitching
he did,
about
I'd
it
be
till
crying
the
like a little bitch. Yeah, I'd be complaining every second.
Yeah,
yeah. Bevan's life would be way more miserable if it was me and not him. I can guarantee that. It's pretty crazy. These kids, man, they're so resilient. When you look around too in the hospital, just there's a bunch of kids, you know, that have whatever the issues are. They're wide ranging, and they just power through it because that's all they know what to do. They just power through it, and they're amazing kids. So it's been cool. A little different this time, just because he's older. So it's been, you know, you see the reactions on the faces and you know him. So it's different than when we were up here the first time in 2017, when he was just born. We didn't know what we were doing at all. Now we have a little bit of an understanding of what the situation is. And obviously we know him and he knows us, and, you know, so it makes things a little bit different. But yeah, I can tell you that I'm ready to go. That's for sure.
Ready to leave?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's been long days, no doubt, long days. So, yeah, appreciate the patience.
You've been there a week and a half, but it probably feels like
it feels like months.
Half.
You yeah. add that to like Corona and like all the nonsense that's just been happening on this year. It's like this year has I swear to God, taken 10 years off of my life. It's just been insane. I looked in the mirror the other day, and I saw way more gray hairs than I have ever seen. I'm like, there's no way that those were not there when I got here. They were not there.
It's the lighting, I swear.
Oh my God. I mean, I can fool myself and just say they're blonde, but they're not. They're not blonde. No.
They were one time.
Yeah, they were one time. I'm just going to cut them off again. That's what I do. That's what's happening. Like, as you get older, I'm just like cutting it shorter.
Shorter and shorter. It's like you just bick the head.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you were saying the time's just dragging by. Somehow it's still 2020. It's still 2020 for Major League Baseball and these players, which it's seeming like it's shaping up to be a terrible offseason if you're a free agent player this year. Bad timing all around. And especially for LeMahieu, he denied the qualifying offer shortly after we last published our episode. There was no surprise there. It wasn't even worth getting back on and talking about it because we were 99.9% sure he was going to deny that offer anyway.
For sure.
But for LeMahieu, especially, you know, particularly LeMahieu, who is, this is his last chance to get a real contract. He's just put up two career years in the biggest market on a team that's gone deep in the playoffs. And he's just not going to get paid what he's worth because of this situation. So from that standpoint, it's just horrible timing. Sucks if you're DJ LeMahieu.
Well,
and then for other guys, like Stroman accepted the qualifying offer. So Stroman's weighing his options, saying, well, I didn't even play in 2020.
Yeah.
I didn't have a good 2019, really. What's the point? Let me just take this.
That's a Cohen, I'm rich as balls. I'm just going to offer you the $18 million to secure a player. That's kind of like what that felt like to me. Because he certainly didn't deserve it.
Stroman's going to take that $19 million, which is more than he would have gotten on an annual value if he were to sign a contract, a multi-year contract
Did he sign that after Robbie Ray signed that deal with...
Robbie Ray signed the contract right around the time that all these qualifying offers were sent out. I mean, that could have triggered some of these guys. But Stroman didn't... He sat out the entire pandemic season. And Stroman is still young enough where if he has a big 2021, he can get a 5-year contract.
Yeah,
so
I think a lot of people don't trust his arm, his elbow. I just think he's such an injury risk at this point too, and he just hasn't shown that he can pitch you know, to the effectiveness that he did early in his career. So I don't know. It's a risk, and I think that's kind of like where the Mets are at this point. They have to take some risk, and they don't care about the money as much. So it's a fine deal for them, but it does set. I was surprised when you look at the money. I mean, the situation makes sense because of Cohen, I think, and where they are. But like, go to Gausman. He's the other guy that accepted right. the qualifying. Like, why did he get that qualifying offer? I don't quite understand that.
Well, the Giants probably thought in a normal season, Gausman would not accept that qualifying offer in a normal offseason. So the Giants are kind of, I guess you could say they're stupid, assuming he was going to get a bigger contract from someone or assuming that he was going to walk. And he's looking at it saying, I was lucky to get this for a multi-year deal.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to take this for a one-year deal. They were just trying to get a draft pick out of it.
That's essentially what Robbie Ray made.
The Giants are not looking... The Giants are not, well, yeah, slightly less, but
it's when he pitched,
I pegged him at like a $13, $14, $15 million a year pitcher based on his performance last year.
Yeah, it's just, it's not surprising that Gausman took it, in my opinion. It's surprising for me that the Giants offered it, and maybe that was the case. Maybe they were expecting him not to accept it because of the year that he had. Yeah,
the Giants are not a playoff team. Although, who knows? Everyone might be a playoff team now.
Yeah, well, in that division, they're probably not, and... Oh, yes, true. If they're expanding, yes, you're right. But they either really, really underestimated what this market was or overestimated it. I don't know what
it would be overestimating.
Underestimated the downside is really what I was meaning. But it was, I think it's a bad job on the Giants' part, but that's fine.
Right.
Good. Because I didn't want him. So good.
Obviously, Trevor Bauer declined the option. Think he called it an insult. DJ LeMahieu declined it. He didn't say a word about it. Classy DJ LeMahieu fashion. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think maybe, do you think maybe after the winter meetings and stuff like that, which usually happens early December, we'll start to see some movement? Or is it going to be one of those off seasons where teams are just like, you know, we might not even be able to open up spring training in February. We might not be able to open up the season as normal. So we're going to wait and wait and wait and wait these guys out and bleed every dollar we possibly can out of them.
I think when guys start accepting some of these lower deals, and we might see some dominoes fall, but it doesn't seem like the big money is going to be coming out anytime soon. And if it, so it's going to be interesting to watch this LeMahieu market. I mean, there's been so much talk in the media, you know, Voit talking about it. A bunch of these guys are just talking about how LeMahieu wants to be here and how much he likes the team and playing in New York and all these things. Great. I love hearing all that stuff. Sign the paperwork. Like, let's just get him signed.
It really doesn't matter until the name is on the dotted line.
Yeah. But the thing about DJ LeMahieu too is that he's not the sexy big free agent that gets all the huge dollars. He's not the Manny Machado type. I don't know how that guy is valued as much as he was in the past in today's game because of the home runs. Like, it's all inflated, and those guys are there because of their power numbers, because DJ is every bit of the defender. So he's in a weird spot because he's not the like flashy player, but he's so incredibly valuable. Obviously he was a finalist for the MVP, did not win it, but you know, he's the guy he's the glue of this team.
Wait, did they announce MVP yet? Because it took him like seemingly forever. It was like 4 weeks of announcing finalists and announcing next round finalists and announcing, oh, so we're going to announce Cy Young AL tonight. We're going to announce NL Cy Young tomorrow. We're going to announce MVP for the National League. It took forever in classic baseball fashion. I know he didn't win it. Jose Abreu won the MVP. But it's just, I was making a joke that it took forever.
They did. Well, they dragged it. Well, they started doing it. They started talking about it.
It took 2 weeks.
Yeah. That's all right.
But let me ask you this. If DJ LeMahieu signs with another team, are the fans going to be excited? Are they going to know a lot
of the other
team? So I got a trade odds, or excuse me, a free agent signing odds email from BetOnline. And it was, where will DJ LeMahieu sign next? So it didn't include the Yankees, because if you sign with your existing team, you can't bet that. But the Blue Jays were the leading, had the best odds to sign him. I guess they're, for whatever reason, the odds makers think that the Blue Jays are the team that are most likely to sign LeMahieu if the Yankees don't. If the Blue Jays sign DJ LeMahieu, are Blue Jays fans going to be excited? Are they going to be like, great, we got a solid player? Because you said he's not the kind of Manny Machado flash.
No, he's not.
You signed Manny Machado.
He's not Bryce Harper sexy. in that regard.
You immediately go and buy a Manny Machado jersey if you're a Padres fan, or you immediately go and buy a Bryce Harper jersey if you're a Phillies fan. Are you going out to buy a DJ LeMahieu jersey if you're a Blue Jays fan?
I mean, Canadians are the stereotype for Canadians are they're extremely nice, right? They are nice people. They are a nice people. Can I say that?
Yeah,
so maybe
that's correct.
So maybe they are. But no, the point is that he's not that flashy guy who brings people to the ballpark. He's not that type of guy that mainstream is going to, you know, be excited about.
He doesn't put asses in seats, but
he puts W's
in the win column.
Yeah, damn right he does. I mean, I will go to watch DJ LeMahieu. You will go to watch DJ LeMahieu. A lot of people who listen to the show will go to watch DJ LeMahieu. Yankees fans now.
No, well, Yankees fans now. Of course. But if the Yankees signed, so I said when we did our GM episode, Tommy La Stella is kind of like the left-handed DJ LeMahieu. It's a lot of the same characteristics as far as versatile defensively, doesn't strike out a lot, bad on ball, does a lot of things well. Maybe he's not as good as DJ LeMahieu, but if the Yankees signed Tommy La Stella, no one's getting excited about that.
You can't compare the two just because they're similar in type. I mean, LeMahieu just won a batting.
La Stella's put up similar stats.
But DJ LeMahieu just put up a batting title, has hit big postseason home runs. He's come up in clutch situations.
You're missing my point.
But I'm saying those are national moments as well. He's been in the spotlight in national moments. Tommy La Stella.
So if LeMahieu goes to sign on another team, Blue Jays, Red Sox, Mets, would the Mets fans be excited? I feel like maybe Mets fans would because they're closer to Yankees fans. Yeah. They've watched him from across the city. It's kind of like a Steve Cohen sticking it to
at the end
Yankees
of the day,
moment.
The casual fan will be like, okay, nice player. In addition, let me research and find out who that guy is or what he exactly did. I mean, that's very casual. If you're an actual fan of the team, then yeah, you should be damn excited because he just made your team that much better. I don't even want to have this conversation because he needs to be on our team. He needs to be wearing pinstripes in the Bronx. That's the only acceptable uniform that this man should be wearing because the Yankees, especially in today's market, should never be outbid. Ever be outbid for DJ LeMahieu. Like, for real. Like there's no contract out there that you can possibly come to me and say, oh, yep, they shouldn't have gone 2 million more, 5 million more. You can't do it.
Right. I'm not literal.
Because when we're talking about value, most valuable player, and I know the award has not become that. The award has become best stats, sexiest stat line of the year guy.
Yeah, well, this year, Jose Abreu certainly deserved the award.
Okay, I mean, sometimes they're the same. Sometimes they're the same guy, but when you look at value, at pure value of a team, it would be hard pressed to look at a guy beyond DJ LeMahieu and say that there are other people more valuable to the way that the team plays, everything, the intangibles, just the whole package. The guy.
Well, now that the way they're doing it, where they announce finalists, so they announce three finalists, and LeMahieu has finished in the finalists 2 years in a row.
Yeah,
I feel like they're using the final three. Things. If you make it to the final three, that's an acknowledgement of your value, even though you might not win.
That's like the Heisman Award ceremony. You're bringing these guys there. We're acknowledging that you're of the ilk, but maybe you didn't get the final nod.
Right. Yeah.
That's okay.
And I know what they used to do is they used to announce first place, second place, third place. It's like, oh, Derek Jeter never won the MVP, but he finished, he got so many like second place votes and third place votes and fourth place votes. And now we don't really hear about that. What we hear about is if you were a finalist.
And I think that's probably a good marketing move, to be honest, because it's giving people a little bit of hope too, as the finalists are announced.
Well, it drags it out even longer.
My guys in there.
I mean, some people really care about awards.
Yeah.
I don't care about it.
But in the offseason, it's something to cling on to. I think people do care about it. You know, you see the finalists that are announced. You're like, all right, my guy's got a chance. Let's go. Gets you going a little bit, especially with a guy like DJ who's become a fan favorite. You know, everybody's behind him. Everybody knows that he deserves it. So
for Yankees fans, the awards always piss them off because they always feel like they're getting slighted. They're saying DJ LeMahieu has been slighted. Miguel Andujar was slighted out of the Rookie of the Year.
Well, yeah, once the finalists are announced, all the conversation becomes, where does the Yankee bias come in to make him lose?
When was when did they do finalists for, like, how long have they been doing the finalists for? Do you know?
No.
This is a very recent thing, right?
I don't remember exactly when that started, but... Yeah,
because I think back to 2016.
It's definitely a social media thing. Because it plays really well on social media. So with the way that things are promoted today, getting that stuff out there, you can make some more cool graphics. You can make some sick edits. You can do all these things that you can put on social that will get people excited.
What you do is you get retweets. Instead of getting the retweets from one fan base, you get the retweets from three fan bases.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, I think there's a lot of the engagement metrics that go into that as well. And so the dawn of social media and the fact that, you know, there's a like insanely good graphic designer in every single area, they're all trying to promote that and make sure that they can push some of the stuff out. So it's another way for it's a good thing because it's another way for MLB to try to market some of their guys. So we shit on MLB all the time for not being able to market their stars. Well, here you go. Here's a table of guys who are at the finalists. They've gotten to the last step of being named MVP. Let's show you who they are. Let's tell you about them. Let's talk about them. Let's give you graphics with stats. Let's show highlights. Let's do all these things. Let's spotlight the best players. It's a good thing to do.
They should add some wild cards into it. It's like, so Kevin Cash won manager of the year, and these things are voted on at the end of the regular season. Even though they're announced in the middle of November, they're voted on at the end of the regular season. So it's ironic because the last thing we remember of Kevin Cash is pulling Blake Snell, possibly the worst pitching decision in World Series history to take out Blake Snell in that situation. But he still won manager of the year because everyone voted before that. Wouldn't it be funny if it's like you can change your vote? You can change your vote after, say, the World Series ends, or maybe it's like you can only try to think of like what it would be good where it's like if you make a colossal mistake, like
you get
Kevin
one mulligan,
Cash did,
just a mulligan, it's got to be within a time frame.
Yeah, or but it's like it's got to be, you can only change one of your votes, so you can't change your MVP vote and your manager of the year
to
vote
be honest,
and your rookie.
If I were to vote even after the World Series, it still may go to him. Because you have to look at the
probably
body of
would
work
because
you have to look at the body of work for the year. And that's at the end of the day, while it was a bad move and it was the implications were massive and the results were massive, it was still one decision.
Yes, I know. But what if it could go the other way where there's an MVP candidate where say the Yankees advanced to the World Series this year, and DJ LeMahieu hit 450 in the World Series and had, you know, the walk-off hit in Game 7 or something like that.
That's what World Series MVPs are for.
Yeah, I know, but it would be cool if voters could be like, you know what? I was going to, you know, I voted for Jose Abreu over DJ LeMahieu in the regular season, but seeing this happen, I'm going to change my vote.
I mean, I see what you're doing.
I know that regular season awards are separate from
well, now you're penalizing Jose Abreu for being on a bad team and not getting the opportunity.
Well, he's not a bad team. He's on a playoff team.
A worse team than the guy that you're talking about because they made it further.
You know what? I'm just trying to spice up the awards voting, and you're not letting me.
If it's DJ LeMahieu we're talking about and they change it to something positive, then yes, of course, do it. Give it to
me. Do you think they should? I guess World Series MVP, typically, obviously, it's kind of like postseason MVP because you're not going to vote for a postseason MVP that doesn't go to the World Series. I was thinking like you could vote for a postseason MVP, but that's going to be on one of the World Series teams. I mean, in theory, you could have a losing World Series team have a player that outperforms everyone else over the course of the postseason.
Yeah.
And they just, you know, didn't do enough to have their team win, but
yeah,
they could get the award.
That's a bittersweet award, but yes, that could certainly be it. I don't agree with it because they weren't valuable enough. Clearly.
Well, that goes back to the whole valuable argument. It's
I guess,
in the regular season, do you have to be on a playoff team or not?
It would have to be a very big team effort on the other side, you know, and like very spread out for that not to be given to a winning team.
Yeah.
A team member.
Some other
and that's
rumors.
Tough to do in baseball.
Baseball, you could actually argue you affect the game the least. If you're a pitcher,
that's why
a
I think
single
it's
game,
out.
But
it's spread out, but like in basketball, like you could lose but score 80 points a game and you're clearly the most valuable.
Or football, if you're the quarterback on the losing team, you put up 48 points, but your defense gives up 49 points. It's like, well, you didn't really do anything wrong.
Right.
The Yankees have shown interest in Yadier Molina, and I don't know how much this is actually serious or if this is just let's throw the Yankees in here because it's the Yankees. Did this surprise you at all, this report? Did it surprise you that Yadier Molina was a free agent? Because it like, kind of surprised me.
He's 30 years old. I thought he was like 45. Oh, yeah. He might be. I don't think it surprises me. Excuse me. I don't think it surprises me. I feel like this is one of those moves I could see the Yankees making as kind of a hedge.
Well, what capacity would it be in though? Because Yadier Molina is a name at this point. He's still a solid player, still solid defensively. He struck out 13.5% of the time in 2020, which is pretty low. So he could still probably be a starting catcher somewhere.
Doesn't Yadier Molina, age 38 years old, make sense to come over to the Yankees though? Isn't this a very Yankee move? It is.
Yeah.
That's why it doesn't surprise me at all.
Like, is Jose Molina still out there? Can he still get in the crouch position? Because let's bring him back.
At the end of the day, when I see a guy that's still playing a defensive, you know, take away the name, take away the age. When I see a 13.5 K rate and I see a good defensive player that's behind the plate, you know what? It's really all I want from my catcher. I don't need all the other flashy stuff. I just don't. I need a guy who can play defense, who knows how to receive the ball well, who can manage a pitching staff, who can make your pitching staff better, if you will, and then don't get up there and be a waste of an at-bat.
Well, but
I will take that over the home run out of one every 95 at-bats.
I feel like this move would be as much to benefit Gary Sanchez as it would be for the Yankees to.
Are we still playing that? Are we really now bringing in a mentor for Gary Sanchez at this point? Is that going to work?
I don't know, at the end
of the day, Gary Sanchez has to be self-motivated now. There's no more of this bullshit. No more coddling. No more going down and having dinner with him. None of this nonsense.
No, the coddling doesn't work. Yadier Molina seems like a guy who's not going to coddle anybody. He's going to be a tough love mentor.
But if you're bringing in a guy, with the intention also to be the guy that can help your other catcher, if that's the motivation, then if that's just a sidebar and we like the player anyway, then okay. And that's just like, that comes with it, but that can't be part of the decision-making at this point. I'm done coddling him. Like, the guy's going to play or not.
Well, the funny thing is, I know we've said this 100 times, but supposedly Joe Girardi didn't coddle him. And that's one of the reasons why he couldn't relate to the young players.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why he was ousted as manager, but Gary Sanchez played the best by far under Joe Girardi.
Right. No.
So maybe some tough love is what he needs.
I think some discipline is what he needs. Discipline in not, you know, bend over my knee with a ruler discipline, but discipline in like your schedule.
Is that Joe Girardi style?
Girardi's definitely that type. Or, you know, if you put your hand on the table, like I could see him coming by. My great uncle used to do that. If our hands were on the table at all, like on the table, he would come over and just like nail our hand.
Like at dinner or something?
Dinner or, yeah, just like his rule was like, don't have your hands on the table. It was impolite to have your hands on the table. So if he caught us with our hands on the table and he's walking by, he would give us a nice like pound on the table and like get our hands. So we didn't put our hands on the table.
I feel like that's not allowed anymore.
Yeah, but I appreciate it now when I look back. I think the Molina could be good for him. But again, I've said that in the past with other people and it's been temporary I thought Gerrit Cole would be good for him. And apparently that didn't work because Gerrit Cole was just on another level. And obviously it wasn't matched the type of intensity or dedication or whatever, just the mindset. They couldn't get on the same page for whatever reason. So I don't know, man. Well, I just don't want to make moves to coddle towards him to try to bring out that talent anymore. It's on him. He's got to do it himself.
What capacity would Yadier Molina be signed for, though? What amount of catching time would he be looking for, do you think? Is it a 50-50 type thing? Is it a 60-40 thing where, I'm technically the backup by playing time, but I'm right there almost neck and neck with as far as playing time goes? Yadier Molina, like, I don't know. That's just too big of a name to bring in as a backup catcher. First of all, I think he should be a Cardinal for life. I think he's one of those guys. Like, Jeter needed to be a Yankee for life. Yadi needs to be a Cardinal for life.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people thought that Pujols was going to be that guy, but Yadi should be. I mean, he's at the end of his career at this point, not looking for a big contract, just still playing. I could see him staying there and doing that. I don't know what that means to him, but I think that at this point, when you have 38-year-old legs and you're catching, you want an opportunity to win. If that's what you're being motivated, it depends what's motivating him at this point in his career. Does he want to stay with the Cardinals, see that thing through? Does he want to, you know, go after a title? And the playing time isn't as much of a thing. Maybe he wants less playing time and to not be the guy. It just depends on what his motivations are, I think, at this point. But
He's a Hall of Famer. He's going to be a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
When his career is over.
Yes.
Whether he retires today or
that doesn't mean he's a Hall of Famer today. Meaning like the play of it. I mean, it's misleading to say that sometimes because Yadier Molina, his career, he's a Hall of Famer, but he's a 38-year-old catcher right now who's a shell of himself.
What I'm saying is, what does he need to accomplish? He's already put up a career good enough to get into the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. He's won World Series titles. Mm-hmm. So what else does he need to accomplish?
I mean, it's like Brady. You wanted to do it somewhere else. Maybe he wants to do it somewhere else. Maybe he wants to go to a different place.
But a backup catcher or a 50-50 time split catcher is not the same as a starting quarterback.
I mean,
doing it.
Fair point. Fine. But at the same time, it's like maybe he just wants to change the scenery. Maybe he just wants another challenge in his career. Maybe he's not ready to go.
Maybe he sees Jose's World Series ring with the Yankees and he's jealous of it.
That could be a case. Maybe Jose is saying, hey, it's great to be in the Bronx. You should go there. Maybe there's some motivations there.
Are you
ready? But at the end of the day, I will not say no to a Molina brother. I think the Molina brothers, if you
what
have
about
a Molina
Benji?
Brother.
Is Benji still out there?
Benji could manage. Bring Benji in as a bench coach. Let's bring the brothers Molina in and see what happens. I think it's not a bad thing. I don't want to overpay an aging catcher by any means, but when you look at what our catching situation is right now, you're either going to go out and get a guy that's a little bit younger and proven, or you're going to ride the guy that has all the potential in the world that just has fallen off the train for a while, or you're going to be relying on a guy like Higgy, who I don't think many people really believe that he's a starting catcher for this team. He's a good backup, I guess, but he's not
Garrett
a guy
Cole's that- personal catcher. So you're ready for this narrative if the Yankees sign Yadier Molina and then they release or trade or send Higgy back to the minors. I guess at this point he's spent enough time in the majors where I don't think he has options anymore. So they would have to release him.
Correct.
So it would be Gary Sanchez and Yadier Molina. People are going to be all upset because Garrett Cole doesn't have his personal catcher anymore.
I think Garrett Cole would be just fine with Yadier Molina as his catcher. He'd have a
you
Hall of Fame.
Think
catcher.
So
he'd be trading.
You would think so.
He'd be trading for a Hall of
his
Fame. Catcher.
No, but he'd be trading his personal his childhood catcher.
Do you think it's
that's
as much
why
about
him
that?
And Higgy had such a good rapport? They remember their time as Utes, Scott, as two Utes thrown in the sandlot.
In
Southern California in their probably $1 million facilities.
We all know the real reason here. Higgy was just the other guy. He's a Jag, man. The problem was with the other guy. The other guy just wasn't up to snuff for what Cole wanted to do. You bring in Yadier Molina.
Is that going to change, though?
Oh, you're goddamn right. No, then Yadier Molina's catching him. You're being received now by a Hall of Fame catcher who still can play defensively.
What about 2022?
Well, to worry about that in 2022.
So there are also some Gary Sanchez trade rumors and some Gary Sanchez non-tender rumors, which I don't see a situation where they don't tender him arbitration. That would be shocking to me.
That would be stupid
for the Yankees
for the Yankees. It's still a bargain. It's still a value, especially when you look at, what could be. I mean, I hate thinking about that, but when you look at the money and you're looking at value, you got to consider that. You absolutely tender. That's to me not even in the conversation.
Yeah, I don't know why it's being talked about. I think I forget what outlet wrote about it. They just basically threw it up there again. I hate that this happens so often. And,
well, because it
and
is
Yankees
it is
fans
an option.
Fall for it.
It is an option,
but it's an option for anyone. They could non-tender Aaron Judge too,
right?
It's an option, but they're not going to do it.
So, at the end of the day, like. It makes a lot of sense to have him here. The value of trading him is going to be extremely diminished. You're not going to get anything for him close to what you thought you were going to get a couple years ago, obviously. So we were laying this out earlier when we were talking about GMs. The value for Gary Sanchez still to the Yankees is on this team still. Hey guys, 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be more efficient, which means every single hire is critical, and Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more visits than any other job site, according to Comscore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly so you can focus on hiring the right person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other job sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only got to pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that you can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates you will see and fast. Try Indeed without free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer is valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
Football is back in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still get in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. And you know what? I received an email from BetOnline about MLB futures and props, and there's some interesting things in here. For example, which team will Francisco Lindor be traded to? The Mets have the best odds at 9-4, but the Yankees, 3-1. Right there behind the Mets. I know there's a lot of rumors out there about Lindor, but that's pretty interesting. Some other ones that I thought were good. Where will Didi Gregorius sign next? The Reds are leading there. The Yankees are at 15-4. How about our boy DJ LeMahieu? Now, this is, quick caveat, it's where will he sign next? So if he signs with the Yankees, that technically doesn't count in these odds. The Blue Jays, though, are leading 5-2. I know there's also some rumors about Yadier Molina. Yankees 2-1 on where Yadier Molina will sign next. And one more for you, Trevor Bauer. Could the Yankees possibly be signing him? They're at 6-1. The Angels are leading 3-1 to sign Bauer. Padres close second, 4-1. So head to BetOnline today. You can wager on some of those I just mentioned or any of the NFL props and odds they've got going on. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses as well. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Couple other around the league notes before we get to a mailbag question, which I think many people will enjoy. I spent a good amount of time researching it.
Yeah, you really nerded out on that one.
So what do you think of Rob Manfred saying, quote, "I wouldn't say a neutral site World Series completely off the table." He said this on November 2nd. It's from a while ago. So people have probably already heard this quote, thought about this quote. We haven't had a chance to talk about it yet, though.
Is he referring to just in general for moving forward, like a Super Bowl?
Yeah. Making World Series week in Miami, World Series week in Texas, World Series week in wherever.
Yeah.
In a dome or warm weather somewhere, obviously, so you don't deal with weather.
Right.
San Diego. Yankees versus Dodgers in coming to you live from San Diego, California.
Yeah. I hate it.
To say the least.
So it's not the same when you obviously for a Super Bowl one there it's one game. There's the fans are not in that game at that game. The actual fans of the team. Yeah, there are some, but that's an insanely hard ticket to get. It's all corporate. It just diminishes the experience of the game for the passionate fans. Right? They don't get the opportunity to go to that game. It will get too expensive. It's just not suited for that. Travel, all of these things. You're taking away the lifeline, the freaking backbone, the blood of your fan base by removing it from that city. Like this year, part of the year of the reason why this year to me was just not as much fun and just a shell of a season was because we couldn't go to the games. The fans mm-hmm. weren't in the stands. They couldn't play at home in front of their own fans. Like that's a big deal. As a fan, going to a game, or at least having the opportunity to go to a game, is a big deal. And if you're committed to a 162-game season, that's a long-ass time. You better goddamn well be rewarded for having a playoff game in your building. If you got to go somewhere, or a World Series game, if you make it to that point, you need to have that opportunity.
A neutral site World Series, especially when it's a 7-game series. So at a minimum, you get two home games, two road games, and then you're playing for essentially to have those final couple games at home. That's what you're playing for, to have that advantage. Doing a neutral site World Series would further water down and neuter the sport. And I just think there's too much of that already. You're doing that by expanding the playoffs. You're doing that by a lot of other things that you've sort of taken the essence of baseball out by turning it into like this algorithm where the computer says this is most likely to happen, so we're going to do that no matter what. It's just would be further going down this vanilla road of suck.
Of just controlled stuff, yeah. But the thing is that, you know, when you're getting to the World Series, it's different than football, who does the neutral site. You're playing one game in each place. But for baseball, you have to win long series at the ballparks. Like, you can't do neutral site throughout the entire playoffs. You're playing to get those games at home because theoretically you have an advantage in that spot. Like, it's part of the deal. It's part of the prize at the end by playing this long grind of a season.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense.
MLB's argument would be, well, look at this year's playoffs. We didn't have to worry about weather. We didn't have to worry about outside factors and all that stuff. But I don't know. It would really...
Ratings were down big time. And I think a lot of that was because fans lost interest because they weren't engaged as much into the teams were playing. They can't go to the games. It's not in the city. It's a different feeling. It makes it different. It's like the eye test. I just know that it's different. That's all. I just know that it's different. It feels different. And I guarantee the majority of the fan base would agree with that. It just feels different. And that's a big deal.
Definitely. At this point, let's just make the All-Star game count for World Series home field advantage at that point.
Yeah.
Whoever wins.
I mean, the All-Star game is a great example. That's at a neutral site. Okay. That's
right.
Fine.
Well, it's also an exhibition. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but you know, like you have your day of Super Bowl day. You do some stuff around it. They're still doing that. NFL doesn't do that. They have the Pro Bowl, but it's not like a big event. I don't even know if anybody watches that anymore.
Does the Pro Bowl still happen?
I think it's in Miami now. I have not watched the Pro Bowl in forever because it's a stupid game. It's not fun to watch.
I know they announce Pro Bowlers, but gun to my head, if they still play the Pro Bowl, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure they do, and I'm pretty sure it's in Miami now. I don't think it's in...
Not Hawaii anymore.
I don't think it's in Hawaii anymore.
The whole reason it was maybe in Miami is because players like getting a free trip to Hawaii.
Right. Maybe it might move around. I don't even know. I've stopped paying attention to the Pro Bowl long ago. To me, it's like you just get anointed to the Pro Bowl. Like that's it. It's not the
right,
game.
That's the thing.
Matter.
Guys back out of it. It's once you've gone once, you're like, okay, been there, done.
I mean,
that.
Playing football at half speed is a sure way to get hurt.
It's also
it's like WWE.
It's like the one sport specifically where when you watch them at half speed, you're like, oh no, this is not right. This does not work.
Yeah, this looks like flag football.
Couple of things about some GM news. So first of all, Jeff Lunau is suing the Astros for breach of contract, claiming the lawsuit claims the Astros owner Jim Crane and Commissioner Rob Manfred negotiated the penalties and set up Lunau to be the scapegoat in the whole situation. And this came down after Alex Cora and AJ Hinch immediately got jobs again. So now Lunau is probably butthurt saying, well, I'm not going to be able to get a job again. You guys made me out to be the bad guy here, when in reality, it was all of us together who were the bad guy. Or maybe Lunau is saying, nope, I was just an innocent bystander. I was just trying to put the best players on the team to win. I had nothing to do with the spreadsheet and the nerds and the buzzers and the cameras and all that kind of chicanery.
Yeah, do you think that it's also like these guys got rewarded for being in there and I'm still sitting here, so therefore it's out and I waited for this because I knew this was going to happen? Do you think he waited for it?
To file the suit?
Yeah, before, like he did it after Hinch got signed.
And after Cora, I think, came back, right?
Yeah, but I'm wondering if Lunau was like, you know, sending little text messages saying like, okay, I'll do it after you get signed. I won't do it before. I'm curious. When you cheat, are you like brothers for life? Are you cheating brothers for life?
I think Lunau's pissed. I think he filed this because maybe he didn't expect Hinch to get a job so easily. And now he's like, oh, so Hinch kind of got off the hook, but I'm not off the hook.
Oh, no. I think when he got turned down and was not getting the jobs that he thought he was going to, that's when he had it ready to go, prepped, teed up, and just like, okay, hit send. Let's go. When he realized that MLB was not going to hire him, he's like, let's go after MLB.
Who's the first non-player you think of when you think of the Astros cheating scandal?
The first non-player.
The first non-player person.
AJ Hinch.
The first person. AJ Hinch. Yeah, probably. That stupid interview he did with Tom Verducci.
No, even before that, all the smugness from the post-game interviews that you look back and watch him about the clapping and about the whistling and like...
Yeah, if we knew it was going to piss off the Yankees, we would have done it. We would have practiced that whistling.
Oh my God. Awful. I'm gonna punch him
Who's the first player you think of?
The first player I think of is Alex Bregman.
Yeah, even though Correa has been probably the biggest douche about it.
He has. He's been the most outspoken douchery.
Like, Bregman hasn't said anything about it.
He said some things early, I think. But you're right, Correa.
Yeah, but he's not still going on about it like Correa. Correa won't shut up. Like, right. At least Bregman has shut up.
Yeah, for whatever reason, though, I still think Bregman.
It's probably because every time he'd take a walk, he would look into the dugout and start doing cartwheels like he was giving.
Yeah, no, I didn't like Bregman. Bregman got to the point where, like, the Astros were at a point, even without this, where I started really just disliking them. You know, it was getting to a point where, like, that rivalry was getting good.
Right, because they were beating you and they were
pissing me off.
Yeah.
And they were smug. And that pisses me off. And that's fine. Like, I like feeling that because it's good hatred. It's good for fandom. It's good for sports. When you find out they're cheating and they're doing all these things, makes it very different. And makes you, like, loathe them. Like, loathe. But, yeah, Bregman's the first guy I think of. Correa is just an asshole.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you. Theo Epstein stepped down from the Cubs. He's going to take some time off from being an executive in baseball. He might be done as a general manager. I mean, he's pretty much accomplished everything you could possibly accomplish as a general manager. He ended the two biggest curses in the sport.
Man, I see him going into Queens. I see it.
But I don't think he can do it this year.
Is there a contractual reason that he can't?
I believe so. I believe I read that. So I believe he has to take a year off.
Well, I mean, Sandy Alderson will just get fired again. I feel like he's been hired and fired like eight times.
No, like Theo, I don't think Theo can, because Theo didn't get fired. He stepped down.
Right. I'm saying he'll wait. Sandy will get fired. Theo will go back in next year.
Hmm.
Maybe.
Maybe. You think he's going to the Mets?
Feels like a Mets move. Maybe just because he looks like
Brody. Do you think he will be the general manager, though, or do you think it'll be more of like
baseball operations president?
President sort of thing, and then I'll have a GM under him? Because I feel like he's done as the general manager.
I could see that
kind of stuff.
Yeah, I could see him definitely moving into a bigger role.
Yeah.
Would you be surprised if he went back to the Red Sox?
Yes, I'd be very surprised. His relationship in Boston did not end well. If there's new ownership, then maybe I wouldn't be surprised. But under the John Henry ownership, it did not end well there for him.
I mean, there's not new ownership.
Right. but when the John Henry bought the team, I believe it was in 2002, he said, we only want to own the team for about 20 years.
Here's an interesting little wrinkle that I was thinking of. So last Thursday, when I was trying to get away from everything, when Kemp was back with his doc squad, I came back to the apartment and we were, I just put on the TV. Bevan took just faded off. And I started watching Moneyball with the guy that I just felt like watching it again. I don't know. Maybe I was just
wanted to learn a little bit about your boy, Billy B.
No, I mean, I've seen it multiple times. I just wanted to like, you know, find some more ammunition to hate him more and just like pick at him because he's a little bitch. Because I still think that. I still think he's a little bitch. But he's going back to the Red Sox now, right? As like a...
Well, he was never with the Red Sox, Billy Bean.
He was never with the Red Sox. He was offered the contract with the Red Sox.
Yes, turned it down. He was offered the GM job for the Red Sox. He turned it down to stay in Oakland. But he's not... He's supposedly not going to be involved in baseball I'm with you.
But here's my point. There are ties.
Heim Bloom is the general manager of the Red Sox.
But there are connections with Theo and the way that they think and the way that they built their teams in 2004. Because that was 2003 that he turned it down, right? So 2004 when...
It was after the 2002 season he turned it down.
So Theo gets in there kind of does a little Moneyball thing with some of the players that they got. Definitely yeah, used some of that.
Spent a lot more money though.
Yeah, but they definitely used some of that mindset. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a bit of a Billy Bean and Theo teaming up and doing something. Feels right.
Do you think Theo's probably, I don't know what adjective to use. Is he the most famous baseball general manager? Is he the most accomplished?
Is he the most accomplished?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Possibly.
I mean, he ended the Red Sox drought and he ended the Cubs drought. I don't know what else you could possibly have on your resume.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. I'd say that, I'd argue that he's not the most famous, though. I'd argue that Billy Bean might be the most famous.
Yeah, you might be right. Yeah, that's funny.
And he has Brad Pitt to thank for that.
Dude, God. That just must inflate his ego even more. You have a movie made about you and it's Brad freaking Pitt.
That doesn't that go against the complete Moneyball, everything against Moneyball? You literally got in the best, the heartthrob of the world, the guy that's been, he's like the new Robert Redford. You know, he was on that path for a long time.
Oh, man.
Doesn't that go against everything that Moneyball is about?
It seemingly would, yes. And some more, final bit of GM news. So the Marlins hired Kim Ng, who is the first female and Asian general manager in baseball history.
Huge deal. This is kind of burying the lead, to be honest.
No, it's a massive deal. And it's massive because it takes the first. Like, I wonder if we'll see more females start to get into positions like this, because it takes one. And then that opens the door.
Well, she's been right there for a long time.
Yes, she's worked for the Dodgers. She's worked for the Yankees. She has worked her way up. This is not the Marlins.
But she also worked her way up. Like, she was in a position where you would think that she would be ready for the GM job like 10 years ago. So she's been on the cusp for a very long time. When she was with the Yankees, she was working right under Brian Cashman for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And Cashman, side note, she went to my high school, Ridgewood High School. A shout. But she's been in baseball for a very long time.
So
she graduated high school, released, I think, in 86.
So right, your year, right?
That's funny. It's good.
So Cashman released a really nice statement about all the work that she did with the Yankees organization. But yeah, she worked her way up. And it's not like, so sometimes you'll see organizations pluck guys out of other industries, right? Like, he's a brilliant statistician or he's a brilliant, you know, consultant or something. And then they'll bring them into the baseball world for a couple years. And then they'll get like put up to, like, Theo Epstein's a good example. Wasn't Theo Epstein like a lawyer or something before he took the GM job? He didn't work his way up through baseball.
Theo didn't?
I believe he went to like MIT or something, or Yale, was a lawyer, and then like worked at some corporation for a few years and then went into baseball because he's like a super nerd.
Yeah, he's one of those prodigy guys that people just wanted to, he figured out the formula. He was too smart for his own good. So they wanted to bring the brains in.
So Kim, on the other hand, she's a baseball mind.
She also went to Harvard. She's also insanely smart too.
Well, yeah, she's obviously smart. You can't be dumb and be a general manager.
Yeah. I'm looking up to see what he was. I mean, yeah, because when he was hired, he was 28 years old.
Right. But I believe for a couple years before the GM job, he didn't work in baseball. He worked in some corporation as like their, I want to say lawyer, but like could have been just like super nerd viceroy of operations or something.
Yeah, I'm reading up to it now. So I'll tell you in a second where he was exactly. I'll get back to you. I'll get right back to you.
So that's pretty cool that, first of all, cool that it was the Marlins, Derek Jeter, making that decision.
Yeah, because they worked together. Jeter knew her from the Yankees. I mean, Jeter's plucking everybody from the Yankees, but that's what you do. You bring in people that you know and trust, and clearly she is that person for him. I mean, she's definitely got the... Jeter trusts her big time. And I think that's a lot of, and she knows the Yankee way. She knows how they were built under Cashman, under Stick Michael, so I guarantee you look at that tree, that Stick Michael tree, man, it's getting bigger now. That Stick Michael tree is getting, getting pretty good with GMs underneath him.
Everyone was shitting all over Jeter for the job he did when he took over the Marlins, but they actually made the playoffs this year, and it looks like they're doing some right things now. He hasn't been there that long.
Well, no, it always looks really bad. You have to purge before you can do anything good, right? And I think that's what that was. There was a purge.
Yeah, but you know how and society he said works. That. Now you have to make a decision immediately. You have to make a gut reaction to what you see in front of you, good or bad. You suck, you're good. That's the only two options. You can either suck or you can be good.
So
that's how we treat things.
Just so you know that Epstein was with the Padres, director of
before the Red Sox
player development. Yeah, so you're kind of wrong. Pretty wrong, actually. While he was working for the Padres, he also studied at the University of San Diego Law and got his JD. So he became a lawyer while he was working there. And then,
how long was he with the Padres for, though? Couldn't have been long.
Yeah, it wasn't that long. But he was, he was doing a lot of stuff with the Padres.
So what I'm saying is,
he even got all the way up to the director of baseball operations. And then after leaving the position as the Padres manager, Lucchino became president and chief.
Larry Lucchino became president and GM of, that's how, that was the connection.
Yes.
But Theo, like you said, he was the general manager of the Red Sox at 28.
Right.
That's young as shit.
Extremely young, the youngest.
Yeah, so it's not like he worked his way up.
I mean, I guarantee he knew somebody to get him the original job, and then he was there for enough time where he showed, kind of the baseball mind that goes along with the other stuff, and it worked. Lucchino obviously recognized talent at a young age. Like, good for him.
All right, so before we get to the mailbag question, I want to do a quick Hall of Fame talk. So the ballot came out. Nick Swisher is big time excited that he made the ballot. It is an honor to even get on the ballot, because not everyone gets on the ballot. You have to be decent enough to get on the ballot.
You don't see people getting pumped up about the ballot as much as Nick Swisher.
But Nick Swisher knows he's only going to be on the ballot 1 year. He's not going to get any votes.
You also don't see people getting pumped up like Nick Swisher, period. So,
did you like how he thanked his parents? Like, he almost gave an a Hall of Fame acceptance speech for
getting on the ballot. Because this is his Hall of Fame.
This is his Hall of Fame moment. What I want to do, though, is I want to go down the list of people, and you give me a gut reaction, yay or nay, if they're a Hall of Fame.
All right, are we doing...
And I'll tell you.
Are we doing steroid guys, too?
It's
the same.
Whatever you want. It's whatever you want.
All right. It's complicated, though. So it's.
All right. I'll tell you if I disagree.
All right.
I'll stop if I disagree. Bobby Abreu.
No.
Barry Bonds.
Yes, but I need a conversation with that.
How do you even hesitate? He's 100%. He's 1,000%. Yes.
Again, Mark Burley. Just the asterisk, but yes. No.
AJ Burnett.
No.
Roger Clemens.
Yes.
So you didn't hesitate for Roger Clemens, but you hesitate for Barry Bonds?
No, I didn't hesitate because I didn't feel like doing that whole song and dance again. There's an asterisk with Clemens too, clearly. Kadire, no.
Dan Heron.
No.
LaTroy Hawkins.
No.
Todd Helton.
Eh. I'd have to look. He's one of the ones that's like...
So his numbers are very impressive, but I just...
When I think of Todd Helton, I think of one of the best hitters in his era.
Yeah, I just also think just product of Coors Field and probably the PED era. And if you're Todd Helton, you're just another guy in the PED era. That's different than if you're Barry Bonds.
He wasn't just another guy, though. He was phenomenal.
All right. I got no time for Todd Helton in the Hall of Fame. Tim Hudson.
No.
I might disagree with you there. Tim Hudson had a really long and solid career, but probably no. Torrey Hunter.
No.
Andrew Jones.
No.
I'd have to look at his numbers. I feel like he's close to 500 home runs.
Does that matter? Like, anymore?
I'm just... Jeff Kent.
I mean, if you held a gun to my head, I'd say no. Very good player. No.
I might have to go yes on that one. Yeah. Andy Pettit.
Unfortunately, no.
Aramis Ramirez.
No.
Manny Ramirez.
Yes.
Yes. Scott Rolen.
Scott Rolen and Todd Helton are like right there. I have to look at some numbers.
Scott Rolen's a better player, I think. Third base. If you're picking between Todd Helton and Scott Rolen, who are you going with?
Todd Helton.
Ooh, I'm going Scott Rolen.
I bet Todd Helton has better offensive numbers. Kurt Schilling.
Yeah, but who's the better player?
I'm just they're different players. I don't know what you want me to tell you. Kurt Schilling, he's a dick, but yes.
I agree. Gary Sheffield.
No. Again, he's very good player, but no. I don't think he's
500 home runs. He played on like almost every team.
Yeah.
Sammy Sosa.
No.
He's a yes for me.
Sammy Sosa? Nick Swisher. Sammy Sosa was a bad baseball player before he juiced his face off.
Part of it is also about what impact did you have on the sport of baseball?
That Sammy is not Sosa had part a gig.
It should be a part
but
of it.
But it's not.
I think it is a part of it.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay, I think you can take it into consideration. The biggest impact on baseball.
Yes, and he's in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion.
But he's not.
Barry Bonds needs to be in the Hall of Fame. This is who I'm voting for. I'm voting for Sammy Sosa.
You're asking me who I'm voting for. I didn't ask you who you were voting for.
No, I told you if I was going to disagree with you. I disagree with you.
Okay.
Nick Swisher?
the Hall of Fame of excitement. Hell yeah. Let's go. No, he's not a Hall of Famer.
Shane Victorino?
No.
Omar Vizquel?
I think Omar Vizquel's defensive numbers put him in because of Ozzie Smith. I think he's close.
I don't think so. Billy Wagner.
If I'm being honest, I thought Billy Wagner got in. yeah. No, I don't think Billy Wagner should get in.
You know he's really right-handed?
Yeah, I did know that.
Barry Zito.
I bet Barry Zito's numbers are... because he flashed early.
His peak was excellent, but I don't think he sustained it.
And he's a good guitar player. But that didn't help Bernie, so it shouldn't help Zito. No.
All right, let's get to the mailbag questions. If you guys want to submit mailbag questions, you can do so at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. Yes, Scott.
So who did we disagree on? We disagreed on Tim Hudson. Like, do you really think Tim Hudson's is a Hall of Famer?
No. I'd have to look at it closer. Like, I'd have to look at him closer, Andrew Jones closer.
Hudson definitely played a lot longer than people remember, I think, because he did have a good run with the Braves as well. He played for a lot longer than I think people would. If you ask
he
people,
played like a decade in Atlanta, and he always put up solid numbers.
Right, but I think that went under the radar a little bit.
Okay,
for the casual baseball fan.
Yeah, for the casual baseball fan, and I'm not saying he's like needs to be.
But that goes into the longevity thing that I just don't like. I don't like necessarily the longevity thing unless you're like insanely steady throughout that entire time and had some very, very good peak years. Which you could probably argue that he did. I'd have to look at his numbers, but my gut is, and we've always said, like, Hall of Fame is almost pretty usually cut and dry with like a gut. And I feel like I have been ruined a little bit because of all of the talk and social media and stuff like that. It's influenced my subconscious, unfortunately. So it's not as clear as black and white as it used to be for me. But it's pretty close, I'd say. And for me, he's like almost an immediate no for whatever reason.
Where did he pitch longer, Atlanta or Oakland?
This feels like a trick question. Atlanta.
Yeah. And he pitched over 3,000 innings, has a 3.49 ERA, 3.78 FIP, 48.9 collective WAR. He pitched over 200 innings 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times.
How many wins? I mean, it's not. How many wins does he have? Because that
222.
Yeah.
That's a good amount.
I think. How many wins did Mussina have?
I don't know. 250.
It wasn't 300. It was under 300. I think that Mussina is going to open the door for a lot of guys. Those numbers are starting to get knocked down.
Mike Mussina was definitely a better pitcher than Tim Hudson was. And Mussina, 270 wins for Mike Mussina. I hate talking about wins.
I know, but it matters when you're talking about Hall of Fame voting because that's what they do consider it. So whether it.
Yeah, but voters are going to stop considering it because like the voters are becoming younger and younger.
That's true.
So the wins thing is going to the old guys are still going to consider it, but they're going to start looking at things like how did you do compared to your peers? What are your ERA plus and minus stats? What is your FIP stats? What is your WAR totals? What are your strikeout totals? Like all that kind of stuff.
Tim Hudson is a Craig Biggio Hall of Famer.
Oh, Craig Biggio actually though is better. I mean, he collected more numbers than Tim Hudson did. He collected 3,000 hits.
I'm just saying that if he had a shorter career, he would not be a Hall of Famer, right? If he just played
sure.
5 years
you
less.
You could say that about many people.
Well, no, but the reason I think he's in there is because he played.
You're right. Absolutely.
And I'd argue the same thing with Tim Hutson if you were going to make this argument.
But longevity is part of
it. I understand that. I get it. It's part of the equation. I do. And I think some of the numbers that Tim Hutson put up would probably surprise me if I looked at his career stats.
Yeah, there's guys who peak. There's guys who can go long. And then you get the peak and the long guys, and those are your true first ballot, no doubt about it, Hall of Famers. There's not many of them.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubters on here, and then there's like fringe guys that I would have to look at. And the no doubters to me are pretty clear. Steroids aside.
Bonds Clemens are the two absolute no doubters.
Bonds Clemens, yeah. I think Manny Ramirez is a no doubter.
Oh, Manny Ramirez is a no doubter as well, too. Yes, I actually think
Curt Schilling's a no doubter too, to be honest.
Manny Ramirez is he's maybe the second best. Would you say Manny Ramirez is the second best offensive player of the last 30 years behind Barry Bonds?
He's the best right-handed hitter.
Yeah, but what does that mean? Albert Pujols is also an awesome right-handed hitter.
He's
not the second best. Manny Ramirez is not the second best. Now I'm thinking about guys like Albert Pujols, like Alex Rodriguez, then maybe it's Manny.
It's right there. It's close, man. Like those guys are all up there. Manny was the one guy that I feared the most of anybody. It was Manny Ramirez. I mean, granted, I hated David Ortiz.
I didn't hate Manny Ramirez.
I agree with that. I hated Ortiz too. Probably because, again, this is similar to the Bregman thing. Like when you're beating us and you're doing it, and then Manny was just like an idiot. He was an idiot. He was one of the idiots, but he was the reason they were called idiots. He was such a moron. He was just like an everyday guy. He was the Gronk of that baseball team in the sense, like, it's really hard to hate that guy because he's so just like, he's a mimbo, you know, he goes through it. So, yeah.
All right. The mailbag question. This one's from Will. Greetings, Andrew and Scott. As a relative newcomer to baseball, I find one of the sport's most appealing characteristics to be that teams cannot simply buy success. For example, I think I heard you say on the show that the Rays' entire payroll in 2020 was less than the Aroldis Chapman contract. I happen to believe this is good for the sport. You cannot just throw money at the problem, and fluidity among the elite teams is more entertaining than monolithic repeat winners.
Oh boy.
However, the owners may see things differently. The Steinbrenners' return on investment, one World Series in 20 years, is distinctly underwhelming when you consider the capital invested. So my question is this. Which teams can boast the best and worst ROI over the last 10 years? I would define ROI as cumulative 10-year payroll divided by World Series appearances. But there are probably other measures which may be a better reflection of the ROI. For example, if you wanted to get nerdy, similar to slugging percentage, you could perhaps do cumulative 10-year payroll divided by wild card plus ALDS times 2, ALCS times 3, World Series times 4, Championship times 5. Thank you.
Wow.
So, do you know who Will is? Will's the CEO of my company.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's funny. Oh, now I know why.
So he is technically my boss, which is why I put so much effort into this question.
That's great. Well, first of all, I think that when you start looking at this stuff, you should make that, you made a spreadsheet, of course.
Uh-huh.
You should make that public. I think you should share the spreadsheet out so people can look at it. We can make it like a read-only type thing so people can look at it. Because I think it's really interesting in the sense of how you can look at this data. And I think that it's interesting when you go through the results. I'm not trying to steal your thunder here.
I'll tell you what I did. And first of all, I just want to also explain. So Will is from the UK and he is a Mets fan, unfortunately. But he says he's a newcomer to baseball. He actually knows a lot more about baseball than he gives himself credit for. But we have these sort of conversations and he'll bring up these questions from time to time. He knows I'm a huge baseball fan. There's another guy in my company that named Dylan. We're constantly talking about Yankees, Mets, and just baseball in general. And he brought up this question and I had my initial thoughts. I was like, you know, initially I was like, well, obviously the Rays are going to be at the top of this because they've had playoff success and they're always at the bottom of the payroll. Conversely, you got a team like the Angels who spend a ton of money and they never make the playoffs. So I was curious to see when the numbers, you know, you actually dive into the numbers, what happens. And what I did was I actually went back to 2010 So it's 11 years of total payroll. And then I basically divided it by, if you won a World Series, how much did you pay for that World Series in total payroll? How much did you pay for a pennant in total payroll? How much did you pay for a playoff series win in payroll, a regular season win in payroll, a playoff appearance in payroll, et cetera, et cetera. And I also got some league averages for this as well.
I love my favorite column is the number of cheating scandals.
Yeah. Surprisingly, the Red Sox paid more for their cheating scandal than the Astros did.
Because of the success.
No, because they paid more in total payroll since 2010.
Right.
Since 2010, the Yankees have paid $2 billion, $2.072 billion in payroll. They're the first, an average payroll of $188.4 million. That is 43% more than the league average payroll over that time. And the Dodgers were second, Red Sox third, Giants fourth. And then all the way at the bottom are the Tampa Bay Rays. Exactly league average is the Seattle Mariners, which I find perfectly ironic considering they're the only team to not make the playoffs over this time span. So the Mariners have spent exactly league average in payroll and they have never made the playoffs.
Does not pay to
the
be
worst
average.
Place to be. The worst place to be in anything is in the middle.
Right.
You do not want to be in the middle. So
I'm a middle child.
Unfortunately, the Yankees have not won a World Series, so they don't even show up here. But the average team has spent $1.165 billion in payroll for every World Series they win over the last 11 years. You understand that?
I understand that.
The Dodgers, one World Series, cost them $1.92 billion in payroll since 2010. The Red Sox, $936 million. The Giants, because they've won three, only $510 million. The Royals, $900 million. The Astros, $900 million. It costs a lot to win the World Series, is basically what this data concludes. To make the pennant, on average, it costs $877 million. The Dodgers, though, they're below league average. So in this case, spending a lot of money gets you success. They're 36% below the average.
Any questions so far? Offer a suggestion so we can take this even further, the spreadsheet, because I feel like we could go nuts even further with this. I'd like to see what revenue was year after, maybe year one, two, three of after winning a World Series, because now there's a profit margin to look to see how much it actually was worth. So yes, there's a value based on the payroll, but the reason why the Yankees may put more money into it because they have the value is higher because their net at the end of the day is higher for revenue because of the market size as well. Whereas
if
the Royals win a World Series, that net is not going to be close to as high as what the Yankees would make.
And it's also like the Dodgers are the perfect example for this because they really started spending at the beginning of the decade and it took them the entire decade to win a championship.
I mean, theoretically, it shouldn't have. They were there.
They were there.
A couple bounces of the ball, and looks very different.
But they're the perfect example because you're like, well, they spent money, and it led up to the championship. Whereas in the Giants' case, they won their championships at the beginning of the decade. So really, they spent money before the decade to win those championships at the beginning part of the decade. So it's not a perfect analysis by cutting it off in 2010 because the Giants won in 2010, but they spent a ton in 2009, 2008, 2007 in order to get themselves into those championship windows.
You'd almost have to do this over 20 to 30 years and look at the differences between them two.
Right.
And
you'd
and
have to
by,
probably do a
spans.
Cutoff. You'd probably have to do a cutoff when free agency started in the 70s.
Yeah. I mean, it would be interesting to continue to do that, though. I think it would be this thing could grow for sure. And we could have some fun with this. This is the type of nerd stuff that I kind of like.
Let me go through some other interesting things that I found.
It's very nerdy to talk about, and I think sometimes it's hard to follow. But go to like the playoff value. To me, like that's the biggest thing is like getting into the playoffs, having playoff success. You're there to Aaron Boone's point. We were so close. We were right there.
So let's see playoff value. I took what Will's idea was to sort of weight it like slugging percentage. So it's a simple formula where you do wait, hold on. I got to find it. So you basically do 5 for winning a World Series, 5 points, 4 points for winning a pennant, 3 points for winning a division series, 2 points for winning a wild card round, 1 point for making the playoffs. And you do a weighted average of those things to come up with a total success value. So in the Yankees example, they have a total success value of 32. They didn't win a World Series. They didn't win a championship series. They won 4 division series over that time. They won 6 wild cards over that time. And they appeared in the playoffs 8 times. That gives them a total value of 32. And when you divide that by their total payroll, you get $64.7 million. They spent $64.7 million to have success in the playoffs. That's actually below league average, a good amount below league average, 133% below league average. The average cost to have success in the playoffs is $151 million. Because there's so many teams out there spending in the middle of the pack and they don't win anything in the playoffs.
So do you think that this playoff success cost is a good way to judge a general manager? It kind of matches up. You can look at the value based on the winning. I mean, this is a direct correlation to the players that are on the field over amount of time. Like, you could, if we put names next to this, that would be interesting, because I think that you can actually get some tenure information about how a GM did with correlated to how much money they spent. Because when you look at the Dodgers and you look at the Tampa Rays, they're very similar in the playoff success cost, but they're very different in the way that they got there.
The Dodgers and Rays are the perfect example, not only because they just played in the World Series, but because they do things, they spend in opposite ways. The Dodgers spend at the top of the market. The Rays have spent the least amount in baseball. Yet their playoff success cost is almost the same, like you said. The Dodgers is $34 million and the Rays is $37 million. The Dodgers have had way more playoff success, but it's cost them the same amount to have that success. The Dodgers have gone to 3 World Series. They won one World Series. They've won 5 division series. They've won 8 wild card rounds. And they've made the playoffs 8 times over that time. So they've had a ton of playoff success, but they've spent a ton of money. Whereas the Rays, they haven't won a World Series. They've only won 1 championship series, 1 division series. They've appeared in the playoff 5 times, but they have spent the least by far. $669 million in total payroll. 76 below the league average.
You can get a lot of information, I think, based on that cost and to see how they got to that point. It is really an interesting metric, I think, when you're evaluating a team, a GM, how the system is working. And you can really take away I can look at that number and see the success in the playoffs too. And clearly you can identify that, that team's scouting department did a damn good job, or that team's analytic department, however you're looking at it, did a damn good job, because they did things a different way than paying for it. Whereas the Dodgers, maybe there was a big mix. Maybe you're signing the big guys, but you're also making sure that the right people are there. Because over time, while they didn't win the World Series more than one time, the Dodgers have clearly had the most success of any team, because they've been in an opportunity to win the World Series. Not just an opportunity to get to the World Series, not just so close. They were actually close. Like, actually close. Mm-hmm. Not Aaron Boone close, but actually close to winning a World Series multiple times. So kind of reverse engineering from that dollar value, to me, is super interesting.
Yeah, the Cardinals have also had a ton of success. Their playoff cost value is $28 million. They've spent decent amount, but not near the top, and they've had a lot of playoff value.
At the end of the day, I bet you go back and you look at some of these teams with this cost, and I don't know, it's not on here, but I bet if we put them together, we would, and you kind of like laid them across like what their farm system ranking was over those 10 years, I bet that there would be a pretty direct correlation to the teams that are developing better than others are going to have more success.
Yeah, really quickly, the Mets are $112 million to have success in the playoffs. They haven't had much success, and they usually spend a decent amount of money. The Mariners have had not made the playoffs. The Angels have only made the playoffs once, and the White Sox have never won anything in the playoffs, so their playoff success value is over $1 billion. The point of this is to show so Will said you simply cannot throw money at the problem. Unfortunately, that's not true. You can throw money at the problem. You have to throw a ton of money at the problem, but that does solve things because the team's
But you have to do it in a way that makes sense too. You can't, to his point, you can't just throw money and then assume it's going to work because they're high paid players. You need to make sure that the players are fitting in with the team
course.
As well.
Of course, that goes without saying.
But that's what the Dodgers did. The Dodgers not only had a very good farm system and they developed players, but they complemented. That's how the Yankees won in the 90s. That's exactly what Stickmichael was doing. Stickmichael was developing players, but then adding the money guys to complement them. So if you're the Yankees, the Dodgers, because theoretically, the Angels threw money. The Angels, that's what they did. They just threw money and it didn't work.
That's the exception here. And that's really the one exception. If you look at the top 10 top seven, Yankees, Dodgers, Red Sox, Giants, Angels, Tigers, Cubs. All of those teams except the Angels have had success in the playoffs. You're saying the Tigers, what have the Tigers done?
Under Jim Leland, they were nasty.
Yeah, they didn't win a World Series, but they went to the World Series. They won the Division Series 3 times, and they made the playoffs 4 times. So they had some success in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. The Giants won 3 World Series. The Red Sox won 2 World Series. The Cubs won a World Series and went to the playoffs a bunch of times. So that's one way to do it. Spend a ton of money smartly, or don't spend any money and be really smart. Be the Tampa Bay Rays.
At the end of the day, you got to be smart.
Yeah, the worst place to be is the middle. The Astros are kind of an outlier here because they spent absolutely no money in the first part of the decade and sucked. And then they've spent a lot of money in the last half of the decade and they've had success.
They tore it down to build up the farm system. They got so many high draft picks. They cultivated that talent. They made the right moves in drafting who they did. They signed guys. So, I mean, they did a good job.
They lead the playoff success value with $23 million.
But they're a bunch of dirty-ass cheaters, so we don't count them.
Well, their cheating scandal cost them over $1 billion.
Good.
All right, I'm sure there's more we could talk about with this. I guess I will share the spreadsheet. Can I share it without having someone like hack into my life?
I think so. I'll have to figure out how to do that. I cannot guarantee that.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Will, I'll send you the spreadsheet at least. All right. Any last words, Scott?
No. This is sign DJ LeMahieu. I'm going to say this every single time. Sign DJ LeMahieu. That's the only thing I want.
We'll talk to you guys next week.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.